Our next matter this morning, State of Ohio versus Kenneth Hodge. Ms. Jackson.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. My name is Angelina Jackson, and I represent the appellant, Kenneth Hodge. The Sixth Amendment to the United States Constitution does not prohibit judicial fact-finding as a predicate to consecutive sentencing. The sole issue in this case is whether the United States Supreme Court's decision in ICE overruled this court's decision in Foster with respect to that issue. The answer is yes. Therefore, Ohio's consecutive sentencing statutes are valid and enforceable and should be applied to Kenneth Hodge.
I'm interested in how you get to that conclusion. It's a straight yes. You're unequivocal in your brief, and you're unequivocal here. I'm having a hard time reading that into ICE.
If I understand the question you were asking, how do I get to the conclusion that ICE overruled Foster?
Yes.
ICE unequivocally held that the Sixth Amendment doesn't prohibit judicial fact-finding as a predicate to consecutive sentences.
How does that overrule Foster?
In Foster, the sole basis for this court's severance of the consecutive sentencing statutes was that such fact-finding violated the Sixth Amendment as construed by Blakely. Which brings me to my second point, which is that because abrogation is the equivalent of direct overruling, the United States Supreme Court was not required to directly address Ohio's consecutive sentencing statutes in order to find that Foster is no longer good law on this point. In ICE, the United States Supreme Court specifically stated that state high courts were divided over whether the rule of Apprendi governs consecutive sentencing decisions. And they stated, and I quote at page 716, "We granted review to resolve the question." In the footnote that is associated with that quotation, they cite two Illinois and Maine cases on one side of the decision, and they cite to this court's decision in Foster on the other side. This court is bound by the United States Supreme Court's interpretation of federal questions.
I said that fact-finding in consecutive sentences is not prohibited. Did it say it's required?
No, it did not say that it is required.
In fact, the whole purpose behind some of the decision-making in Apprendi and such was to restore discretion to the judges and to make those mandatories become discretionary, which is what we did in Foster. And so I'm having trouble, as Justice Kupp is, seeing where you read in ICE that now you have to have judicial fact-finding for consecutive sentences. Historically, the sentencing ranges and adding consecutive sentences has been a discretionary act, and that seems to be what the original cases allowed. So where do you read that we mandatorily now have to have fact-finding out of ICE?
It is true that ICE did not hold that judicial fact-finding was required. However, the severance of the statute, this court's act of severing the statutes, could not and did not repeal those statutes. And so the reason why we are required to engage in the mandatory fact-finding is that the consecutive sentencing statutes are still on the books. They have never been repealed or abolished. Severance means to merely be held invalid. It's a tool that a court can use to preserve statutes where possible. If there are offending words or provisions or statutes within a statute or a broader statutory scheme.
And your reading of Foster overlaid by ICE is that Foster is, the holding in Foster is gone. And so the statutes that we declared severed and longer constitutional, are resurrected, and now you want to reel back in every case that has happened since Foster in which the judge did not do fact-finding and send all of those back. So one more train wreck is what you want.
No, that would not be our position. Pursuant to Griffin, everyone who raised the issue on direct appeal at the time ICE was decided would be entitled to the benefit of the consecutive sentencing. Because this is a new rule related to criminal procedure, it would apply retroactively to the date of the ICE decision.
Okay, but so we're in a situation in which lawyers representing defendants told us that we had to overturn all of those sentences in which judges made fact-finding, and now defense lawyers for criminals come back and say, well, the Supreme Court made another decision, so now you have to redo all of those cases where the judge made determinations that we don't call fact-finding.
If individual criminal defendants did raise the issue on direct appeal at the time ICE was decided, then pursuant to Griffin, they would be entitled to the benefit of resentencing, as well as subsequent cases going forward. I think that this would be a much smaller class of defendants or number of defendants than the train wreck that I believe that you reference.
Counsel, I'm kind of interested in your theory that the severed portions of the Ohio Revised Code that were declared to be just that, severed, are now revitalized. And the fact, the activity of this court in declaring them unconstitutional, what you're saying is they were only temporarily unconstitutional. They were still on the books, and the legislature or this court needs to do nothing more to resurrect those excised portions. Is that basically what you're saying? And do you have authority for that scenario? What gives you that perspective, I guess I would ask?
We've used a lot of terms like resurrect and revived and retained. To simplify it, the statutes were never repealed.
Let me stop you right there. When this court declares a statute unconstitutional, does the legislature then take that opinion, go across the street, and pass legislation to repeal a statute?
Occasionally.
Do you have examples of that?
In House Bill 2009, House Bill 130, there were amendments made to the revised code in order to bring it into compliance with State Ex Rel Bray versus Russell, which was a 2000 decision by this court. And at that time, the General Assembly could have also repealed the consecutive sentencing statutes or amended them to bring them into compliance with the Foster decision, and that did not happen.
When did this happen?
This was in 2009, House Bill 130.
But if we've declared them severed and unconstitutional, why would they do that? It's a vain act. They've already been taken off the books by our decision, essentially, and so there's no need for the legislature to say anything, is there?
Under Article 2 of the Ohio Constitution, the power to repeal lies solely with the General Assembly. Severance cannot repeal a statute. It's there to work as a tool to hold statutes or portions invalid.
That's a legislative act to do that. And you know, we're a separate branch of government. We're not repealing a statute. And by the same token, the legislature is not declaring a statute unconstitutional. That's our constitutional responsibility. So there are two different methods to arrive, I would argue, at the same end. And this court has used its authority to declare those portions unconstitutional, which is, in my mind, I believe, either equal or superior to the act of repealing, because repealing has nothing to do with constitutionality. And the example that you just answered my question with, you're saying they had the opportunity to repeal this in 2009, and they didn't do it. So therefore, it's still on the books. That's not — I mean, I really question your perspective on the role of this court with the legislative body of this state and the conclusions that you're drawing based on that perspective.
As a follow-up question, in footnote 8 at page 2 of your brief, you talk about the General Assembly looking at other sections of the sentencing laws. And I just want to make clear or clarify for myself that you're talking about other sections and that there was no tinkering, no attempt by the General Assembly to address consecutive sentencing in a different way. As the justices have said, these sections have been severed. It was severed, and the General Assembly did not act in any way to make a law or enact a statute that related to consecutive sentencing in any way, correct?
That is correct. Okay. There have been 11 amendments
to other portions
correct,
of the sentencing
to other portions,
law.
And the consecutive sentencing statutes have been retained in their entirety.
Counsel, when you say the consecutive sentencing statutes have been retained, the normal course is when this court declares a portion of the legislative activity in the statute unconstitutional, and we try to do so very precisely and excise just sections of it. Typically, historically, there can be a response by the legislature to then take the case and the position announced by this court and incorporate it into legislation to try to meet the directives of this court, or and then the legislature will refashion a piece of legislation. It's done repeatedly. And I don't see that as having happened, and your response to Justice Lanzinger indicates that that has not happened. Is that correct?
That is correct. The statutes have not been refashioned.
Okay.
However, there is authority supporting the fact that once an invalidating decision is overruled, the statutes are immediately enforceable. This position would be consistent with this court's holding in the Peerless Electric Company case, which supports that, practically speaking, the severance did not occur. The effect of ICE is not that Foster was bad law, but that it never was the law. And similarly, in Rocky River, what this court did is overrule its prior decision invalidating a statute as unconstitutional. It held that that case was vacated and held for naught. And there was no discussion in that case of any requirement that the statute be repealed or reenacted of any sort. And so
counsel,
the act, because... Yes.
Counsel, just taking a quick look at Foster, it's... And I didn't reread it before today. It's long. I joined it. Thought it was right at the time. Not sure it isn't right still, because, as I thought, when Justice Lanzinger wrote it, she refers not only to the Sixth Amendment, but to Section 5, Article 1 of the Ohio Constitution. And they seem to be woven together throughout the Foster opinion. And so we hung our hats on both, referring to Blakely, of course, and what the U.S. Supreme Court was doing. And they got cold feet after there was a backlash in the federal courts, and retreated in ICE from what they had done. But that doesn't mean that we necessarily have to do the same thing, because we hung our hats on both, the federal constitution and the state constitution, did we not, in Foster?
With respect to the consecutive sentencing statutes, the decision clearly states that they are invalid pursuant to the Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution, as construed by Blakely.
So you don't think we wove the two together? That's what the defense lawyers were arguing at the time, and it's what Justice Lansinger talks about in her opinion from start to finish.
No, I don't think that the two were woven together. Additionally, to this point, there's been no discussion of the Ohio Constitution. It wasn't raised by the state in their brief, and we haven't addressed.
Well, that really doesn't matter to us, does it? If we pegged this on both, then because the U.S. Supreme Court decided to unring the bell as far as they were concerned, until we do the same with respect to the Ohio Constitution, it's still in force, isn't it?
The opinion is straightforward in its language that the basis for invalidating the statutes was the Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution. There is no discussion or analysis related to the Ohio Constitution. For that reason, I would maintain that it's been overruled by ICE.
Thank you, Ms. Jackson. Ms. Curran?
Chief Justice Brown, and may it please the court, there are two reasons why this court should not overturn Foster. Number one is that ICE did not overrule or abrogate Foster. Specifically, the United States Supreme Court was considering an Oregon statute that is not similar to the Ohio statute pre-Foster, 2929.14e. And additionally, this court need not depart from precedent. ICE, in its considerations of Oregon's statute, as the court has noted, did not mandate that judges make judicial findings before imposing consecutive sentences. They did not set out a new rule of law that is required. They allowed for multiple options as far as sentencing is concerned.
Okay, counsel, if we determine that we, upon reflection, really like the statutes that we severed, mm-hmm. And that may have been the case for some of us that joined in the Foster decision, but felt based on the precedent articulated or based on Blakely, that we had no choice, that our statutes were in violation of what the Supreme Court seemed to be saying at the time. So if we said we think the citizens of this state are better served by those statutes that we severed, can we resurrect them if we wanted to?
The state's position is no. Number one, the legislative body is best left to make those decisions about what public policy should be.
Well, it's not a question of where that's best determined, but can we undo
Foster.
what we have done?
Not in its entirety.
And make the statutes, which haven't been directly repealed, come back to life.
There's two issues with that. Number one is that the court in Foster severed multiple parts of the sentencing scheme. It should be considered in its totality as far as what the General Assembly intended and what it wanted to do and what effect the sentencing scheme should have. If this court decides that it wants to bring back the consecutive sentencing portion of those statutes, it still cannot under under ICE do anything to affect the rest of Foster's holdings as far as for concurrent sentence, more than the minimum sentences or other findings that the judges previously were allowed to make.
Well, I think my question is, if we just said we're just going to reverse Foster
correct.
Altogether, your position is those statutes that were severed don't immediately come back to life.
No, Your Honor. Under
revised code of the state of Ohio.
Correct. Under State Ex Rel v. Schneider, this is a situation where the General Assembly has to act at this point in time. Those statutes have not, as was noted in the amicus briefs, has not been repassed in the way that those statutes should have been repassed if they were intended to still have effect. They've been repeatedly retained on the books. They haven't been struck as part of the General Assembly.
As I recall, the statutes were put there, perhaps it was as a result of the Sentencing Commission that Chief Justice, former Chief Justice Moyer spearheaded. As I recall, they were put in place because of the disparity between sentencing from judge to judge and county to county. And
correct.
It was an effort by the General Assembly to see to it that there was some fairness to defendants in terms of some degree of equality of treatment
correct.
From one of the state to the other. So they were there for a good purpose.
Arguably.
We weren't necessarily delighted to take them off the books.
Understood. And I'm not here, I guess, arguing about whether those were or were not good laws at the time. The issue for today, as far as I can see it, is whether or not that one part of the statute should be revived here because of ICE, and not just as far as what this court is intending to do, because in all honesty, the defense never requested this court to overturn Foster. They have argued all along that ICE automatically revived those statutes. I think the problem with that is twofold. Number one, that if Foster never was the law, then we're really invalidating every sentence that occurred even before ICE was decided. It's every sentence that was done consecutively without making those findings since Foster, which is possibly thousands of defendants for the state of Ohio to resentence. In addition, if ICE abrogated Foster, as the appellant has argued, how could it not be retroactive? According to their own case law, if it never was the law, if Foster never was the law, it automatically is retroactive, according to Appellant Hodge. This case is a situation where the court is looking at not only whether or not those were good statutes in and of themselves, but whether it wants to retroactively apply them under a situation where it wasn't the law at the time in the state of Ohio. Beyond that, the statute here in Ohio is significantly different from the statute in Oregon. One of the major differences between them is the types of facts that the judge is supposed to find. In Oregon, it is very similar to our allied offenses statute as far as whether the harms were the same or different. Under Ohio's statute, though, it is beyond those types of questions, which I think this court considers to be legal questions, legal determinations, not so much factual determinations, which is another difference between Oregon statute and Ohio statute.
Well, counsel, if your position is that the United States Supreme Court in ICE does not prohibit judicial fact-finding.
Correct.
As is exercised or was exercised in Ohio. It doesn't prohibit it in consecutive sentencing, but it also doesn't mandate it. And that should be what I think is the end of the analysis. And your argument that, you know, it's going to open the floodgates and we're going to have to resentence all these, you know, that's not going to be necessarily a deterrent to doing the constitutional and the right thing for this court. We can't really say, gee, we'd like to do the right thing, but it's going to be too much of a burden. That's not, at least that's not how I would approach it. So I think it's, you know, a very simple analysis. If it's not prohibited, and, you know, that's a very different animal than it's mandated. And that and then this analysis of the interplay between the legislature and this court and the difference of a repealed statute versus a statute or a portion thereof declared unconstitutional, you know, I think is another side of the coin that we need to examine.
Yes.
Counsel, isn't the real situation here that if the General Assembly were to look at the consecutive sentencing again and determine that it wished to have the judge make findings of fact and would enact a statute, let's say, identical to the one that we severed, this court then would look at it anew and say, fine, that is constitutional. But the problem was, in Foster, we had a line of cases from the Supreme Court that said fact-finding cannot be mandated, and we severed the section related to consecutive sentences. And we, I think, in certain cases, have talked or have suggested to the General Assembly that they may wish to look at this issue, and they have chosen not to up till this point.
Yes, Your Honor. That is something that the General Assembly has not done. They have not readdressed the issue of sentencing since Foster was decided. They could have. They have not. I don't know, in all honesty, why they haven't, but the effect of that is ultimately that we're still in a situation where there is no statute beyond the law that the common law that this court has set forward. The tradition of allowing consecutive sentences is one that this court should also consider in determining its decision. That's part of what the United States Supreme Court considered. The specific decisions that the judiciary had to make under 29-2914E go beyond the facts of the case itself as far as legal determinations, and that's something that also the United States Supreme Court may have considered to decide differently if they had considered Foster. They
didn't. Curran, you're suggesting then, make sure I understand, that the fact that the legislature has chosen not to repeal this law doesn't have any significance in your view. The fact that they've chosen to keep the law on the books does not represent, in your view, a continuing intent for sentencing laws in Ohio to achieve proportionality and the other goals of Senate Bill 2.
Correct. If the legislature had actually amended the statutes and shown an intent to actually repass statutes in an amendment post-Foster or post-ICE in a way that complies, this court may be in a different situation. But that was not done.
But didn't the General Assembly basically have perhaps three options? One, to repeal the law. One, to modify the law. And the choice that they exercised here, which was not to touch the law as it stood on the books. And in that case, doesn't that represent the continuing policy and direction of the legislature that we must respect and give deference to?
But this court had already decided in Foster that it had severed those aspects of the law that the defense is now arguing should have been imposed. This situation is one really where the jurisprudence issue is whether or not ICE actually overruled Foster. And we would submit that it did not. It did not consider the same statute, even though the rule that was pronounced in ICE has bearing on this court as far as how it should review statutes, which is true.
In the Oregon case, what was the history of how the Oregon matter got to the court. In other words, was it a similar path in that the Oregon court overruled the consecutive laws and then that was challenged, or how did that come about?
If I recall correctly, the Oregon Supreme Court had actually decided that those laws were, I believe that they struck them down and that the defendant actually appealed. I'm not 100% sure on that. I don't recall for sure. I know that there are different states who have decided differently and found that because Apprendi and Blakely had not specifically looked at consecutive sentencing, that their laws were fine. This court was free to decide differently. When the court actually looks at the revivification, as the appellant has argued, their case that they cite primarily is Hooven, which is a different scenario than what we have here in Hodge. Hooven was a situation where it was a United States Supreme Court case that had overturned a previous rule of law by the United States Supreme Court. It was clearly applicable to that rule at hand. This is not the same situation. Even if the underlying basis of Foster could have been decided differently, which I don't think was clear at the time, none of the case law from Apprendi, Blakely, or ICE was unanimous among the court. They were all 5-4 decisions. This court was in a position at that time to do what it believed was proper at the time, and given the differences between Ohio statute and Oregon statute, they are different. Even if the Oregon Supreme Court had actually upheld the validity of the statutes, I think the United States Supreme Court would have given it more deference.
Counsel, I want to bring you back to a question I put earlier and looking again back at your brief. If we were to decide that we did Foster principally because of Apprendi and Blakely, thought we had to have that outcome, and even though we referenced the Ohio Constitution as well, that given ICE, we would be free, those statutes that we severed would no longer offend at least the U.S. Constitution, and we thought they would be, we would be well served, the state would be well served to have those statutes in effect. And we don't want to have the train wreck of reopening all these cases. What's to prevent us from saying, well, we're now going to overrule Foster. This case presents us the opportunity. And those statutes are now alive and well again prospectively. Now, you say, well, you should, your argument principally is in the brief, stare decisis, you shouldn't touch Foster for that reason. But if we were to conclude that, what case can you point to that says we can't bring those statues back from the graveyard?
As far as that specific question, I believe...
Since if you pick up the revised code and look, they're still there.
Correct. Well, as far as whether or not they're still there, the court needs to also, I think, look at what the General Assembly's intent was when it left those statutes on the book.
Well, we can't read those tea leaves, I don't think. I mean, that requires us to all guess. And there is no collective thought on the part of the General Assembly ever. There's no repository that you can look to and find that. So is there a case that says you can't do that?
Well, essentially, I am not sure off the top of my head whether there is something that specifically says...
Isn't that pretty important? I mean, doesn't this whole thing turn on that?
Ultimately, well, yes and no. If the court decides that prospectively, if this court wants to overturn Foster, we certainly can't stop the court from doing
that. Well, I understand that, but I mean, does that mean that those statutes come back to life?
We would certainly argue no, that it's left for the General Assembly. As far as how statutes are passed in Ohio, ultimately, if 2929.14e is not the law, and this court then decides that consecutive sentencing may be done based upon judicial fact-finding, the General Assembly has the opportunity then to pass a law in conjunction with that.
My question isn't what they can do. I understand full well what they can do. My question is, what are the limits of what we can do, or what is the effect of what we could do? Because we can clearly overturn Foster, but what would be the limits of the meaning of that?
If I may, Your Honor, I believe that from what I can recall of the case law,
But if you're not sure, that's fine.
I'm not
trying to bury you here.
No, Your Honor, I'm not entirely sure.
I'm genuinely interested in what the answer to that question is.
I do recall, I believe that it's State X Rel v. Schneider. I'm not entirely sure that that is the case that I'm thinking of properly regarding the separation between this court's responsibilities or powers and the power of the legislature.
I mean, it would be no embarrassment for us to overturn Foster. The Supreme Court let us into a box canyon, and then they turned around and ran out of it.
I can't argue with you on that. I think, in all honesty, every legal commentator was surprised by ICE after Apprendi and Blakely. I don't think that this court could have foreseen that the United States Supreme Court was going to rule the way that it did in ICE.
Counsel, though, do you have any cases that talk about what a court can do after severance of a statute? Is there something that would allow us to sort of reattach it or revive something that we have severed? For us to do it, not the General Assembly.
I don't believe that that's something that's within the power of this court because of its actual role in government. This court is intended to rule upon laws that are passed by the legislature. As far as a case that indicates that, off the top of my head, I do not have one off the top of my head.
So we have we have the power to strike down. We do not have the power to reenact.
I don't believe so, no. I'm sorry that I don't have something specific. Thank you.
Ms. Jackson, 2 minutes.
I have 3 points to make. The first is that there is no authority that requires reenactment of a statute in order for it to be applied if it is still existing on the code books of this state.
What Schneider, is your authority for that, please? Do you have the case to cite to?
It would be Article 2 of the Constitution that the only authority to repeal a statute belongs with the General Assembly. These statutes that are at issue in this case have not been repealed.
But we're talking about severance. We're talking about severance. So do you have a citation that would suggest that the General Assembly must repeal after the court has severed a statute?
There is no Ohio case directly addressing what must happen specifically in the case of severance that I have found. However, the cases Peerless, Rocky River, and additionally every other jurisdiction, including Alabama, Iowa, Indiana, Florida, and D.C., that have addressed the issue have uniformly held that when the decision, the invalidating decision, is overturned, the statutes are immediately enforceable. And that is consistent with this court's decision in Peerless Electric Company and Rocky River, where the prior decision was overturned and there was no discussion of reenactment being required in order to apply the statutes.
So that would mean we'd have to accept your proposition that ICE overruled Foster. That's crucial to your argument, correct?
Yes, to accepting that ICE overruled Foster or this court overruling Foster today would have the same effect. In terms of the question that was posed earlier about going moving forward prospectively.
And if we do that, your client was convicted of 5 counts of aggravated robbery?
Correct, and 1 gun specification.
On Christmas Eve, when he robbed the Boy Scouts and their parents?
Correct.
And he got 3 years on each of the 5?
Correct.
Consecutively?
Correct.
And you want him resentenced?
Yes, we do. We believe that he is entitled to the benefit of the considerations of the statutes that exist on the books related to consecutive sentencing.
He got an absolute minimum sentence of 18 years. Couldn't get less, right?
The sentence that he would have received concurrently would have been 6 years, 3 years running concurrently
concurrent,
on each
if
of
they
the
were
underlying.
All concurrent, but consecutively. What's to say the court couldn't impose more than 3 years on each of those counts on a resentencing and make them consecutive if it found, for example, that the public needs to be protected from this kind of activity of stealing from people on Christmas Eve, selling Christmas trees, especially the Boy Scouts?
There is nothing to say that the court perhaps could not find the third factor. 2 of the 3 sentencing factors did not exist in this case.
Doesn't have to find all of them. I mean, if we take your argument to its logical conclusion, your client could get an awful lot more than 18 years.
It's
a possibility.
It is true that it is possible that he could receive the same, more, less. But the fact of the matter is that we can't know because the analysis that's required by the statutes wasn't followed. There was no discussion of the factors that are set forth to guide whether consecutive sentences should be imposed. Of course, it's our position that they shouldn't.
What is your answer to Justice Pfeiffer's question about whether or not, if Foster is overruled, as you're asking, this court applies it prospectively only?
What was the question? I'm sorry.
Well, I think what Justice Pfeiffer was trying to explore is there anything that would prevent this court from overruling Foster and only suggesting a prospective, not a retroactive application?
There is, under Griffith, as I stated earlier, we believe that it should be a retroactive application, but there's nothing to prevent this court from overruling Foster and applying the rule prospectively, but Kenneth Hodge would still be entitled to a resentencing.
This case going forward, what about other cases that are either in the pipeline or have been sentenced and not afforded this remedy?
For cases that are currently pending on direct review, they would be entitled to the benefit of the statutory factors in resentencing. If I could just close, if there are no further questions. If ICE had been decided before Foster, I wouldn't even be standing here today because the statutes wouldn't have been severed. They're on the code books, and we just ask that Kenneth Hodge be resentenced in compliance with them. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jackson. We're going to take a short break at this time.